The information in today's episode is not to be used as medical advice. If you are currently struggling with or dealing with something out of the ordinary, we highly recommend talking directly to your provider. Welcome to the Flow State Podcast, where we're all about finding balance. We're your hosts, Monica Groney
and Nora Candido. Now let's get into the flow. All right, Flow State listeners, today we are diving into maybe a more advanced topic that I'm really excited to welcome back. Mandy, you may have remembered her from the PMDD specific episode. She is our expert on all things PMDD, and today we are going in, baby. So let's jump into it. Let's dive back in. I'm so curious to hear your side of what we're going to talk about today. So let's do it. We're going to talk a little bit more about kind of the root cause or the underlying things that contribute to PMDD. And I think this is a really helpful conversation to have if you are maybe have listened to that episode, and we'll reference back to that one in our show notes. But maybe you're thinking, do I have this? Do I not? And today we're going to review maybe some more symptoms and things, specific kind of descriptions that might be more helpful in helping to identify if this is something that is true for you. So Mandy, why don't you kind of give us a brief little overview of this topic and how we're going to dive in today?
Sure. Glad to be back. And it is a big topic. And a lot of times people will read an article online about histamine intolerance and PMS or PMDD and wonder, is that for me? And if so, okay, am I doomed to just follow a low histamine diet forever? Which I will tell you is not fun to do. And we'll get into what that would entail. And so I think it's really important to look at this as a potential root cause. And then what else can you do beyond following a restrictive diet? Because that's not fun for anyone. But it might be important to even talk about, for anyone totally new to this topic, what histamines are, and then go from there about the potential connection to both PMS and PMDD.
I think this is so interesting too, as a fellow PMDD warrior in the room. This is a topic that I personally haven't explored at all. So it is really interesting to see, you know, PMDD is this overarching disorder, diagnosis, if you will, and there is so many things that can go into it, and each unique experience is very unique. So I'm excited to learn today and ask a million questions. So yeah, Mandy, what are histamines?
Yeah, so they are, sometimes they're made out to be a bad guy, but they're really not. They're really necessary in the body. We just don't want them too high or low. So they're both kind of, it's unique. Histamines are an immune protein and they act like a neurotransmitter or a brain chemical. So there's multiple roles. And just a few examples of why we don't want them too low. It regulates the production of stomach acid, impacts libido, impacts ovulation, even like our body rhythms, our body temperature, our sleep-wake cycle, appetite. It's just when they become too low, or in this case, mostly today we'll be talking about if they're too high, then it can start causing symptoms. And so think of it simply as they're an immune protein like involved in that like allergic type of reaction. So when we talk through some of the symptoms, we'll be like, oh, that sounds like my seasonal allergy type of symptoms. And they're involved in the inflammatory response in the body. And so sometimes if there's a lot of inflammation, whatever may be driving that, we can have more histamines. But they're really, really important. Like I said, not all bad, to help the body defend against any potential invaders like bacteria or viruses or anything, especially when we're sick. So really important role. On the mood side, it's also all about balance. So when they're out of balance, it can lead to mood issues like anxiety, depression, even panic. And there's also research that's been associated with obsessive compulsive disorder and even perfectionism. So a lot of mood impacts as well. I'll just stop there. But so that's kind of in a nutshell what it is.
So this is something that I talk about often with my clients too. And a way that I like to describe it, because I love how you said there is, we need them at a necessary amount. So we don't want to completely suppress them. And I do have individuals that come to me and they're like, when I take an antihistamine like Claritin or Zyrtec, I feel amazing. And this gives me such a big indicator into some of these underlying things that they might be navigating. It doesn't have to necessarily be associated with PMDD. I see individuals with something called mast cell activation syndrome, a lot of like gut related stuff, that there's a lot of things we'll talk about later too, the reactions and connections with histamines as well. But that's like, you know, when I think of those histamine like reactions, this to me, there's a wide array of things. You can experience like runny nose while you're eating, even itchy skin, hives, a lot of those like allergy type reactions. So, or even racing heart. I know you were talking about a little bit of anxiety and the mood connection there as well. So those are things that I start to have people just begin to take notice of any of those symptoms, especially around if there are cycle correlations or even around specific foods. But I'm curious to hear from your end too, like what is the connection that you found between PMS and PMDD and histamines?
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, first want to clarify that it's not the case for everyone with PMS and PMDD, but you guys have covered on other episodes how hormones fluctuate throughout the menstrual cycle. And so think of it as histamines are on the same kind of roller coaster up and down that estrogen is. So as estrogen rises, and that happens right before ovulation, and it also happens in the middle of the luteal phase. So that's like the second half of the cycle. For most people, depending on cycle length, would be about a week before their period bleed. So as estrogen is peaking, so does histamine. And so the other thing that can happen is estrogen also impacts the little enzymes that our body makes to break it down. And so it can be kind of a vicious cycle where we're making more estrogen and thus more histamine. And then the more histamine we have, the more estrogen we make. So there can be a cycle connection. But it doesn't always happen if there's like an imbalance in hormones. As we talked about with PMDD on the last episode, there's not necessarily an imbalance in hormones. It's just there's more of a sensitivity to those hormone changes. And I think of it as like the histamine connection is just like adding fuel to the fire. So if the body is or the brain is responding to those hormonal fluctuations, histamine can come in and just aggravate those symptoms even more or even be a primary root factor for some people.
Hi there, it's your host, Monica. If we haven't met before, highly recommend you go back to season one and listen to the episode where I share my PMDD story. One of the reasons that I'm interrupting the episode right now is that I wanted to share a little bit about Mareya. Mareya is the menstrual wellness brand that I founded after finding out that I had PMDD and was struggling. I wanted to find a holistic root cause solution to help me feel better, and nutritional supplementation gave me the foundation to heal. That's why I developed the PMS Elixir with our amazing team of medical advisors. The PMS Elixir is a drinkable multivitamin that truly provides the essential vitamins and minerals needed to provide you that foundational level of nutrition and give you a base to heal from. Our medical team has hand-selected the nutrients, their forms, their quantities, so that this multivitamin is not only delicious, but is also providing you a therapeutic-grade dose of the exact nutrients you need. If you are interested in trying the PMS Elixir, head to the website www.mareyawellness.com and use the code FLOWPOD, FLOWPOD, for 15% off your first month. Truly, these nutrients were a game changer for me, and they are now supporting thousands of women, allowing them to have healthier and happier periods. All right, back to the episode.
Yeah. Monica, like just in kind of hearing some of this stuff, I'm curious to hear your thoughts. Like, I know this is a newer topic for your ears, and how is it all kind of resonating already?
I think it's just interesting to hear the correlation, right? You know, you hear from so many people, and maybe we all experience it, have experienced it, of experiencing symptoms, not just in the luteal phase, but also around ovulation. I think that's something that I hear from our community really often is, okay, but I'm really experiencing it around ovulation. And so to kind of hear that there could be some correlation with the histamines, maybe. Also, like the runny nose thing, I'm like thinking like, oh my God, my nose runs when I eat food like all the time. I'm like, maybe I do have histamine sensitivity that I just haven't recognized before. So I think I'm just trying to like absorb and process it all right now because it is such a foreign topic. So for anyone listening and you're like, whoa, what is this? Of course, we feel it around seasonal allergies and that kind of thing. But I think we don't really understand I haven't known that it could play a role on the hormonal side of things.
Yeah. Do you see it, Mandy, for some of your individuals as well as it changes throughout the seasons? Do you have individuals where maybe their PMS or their PMDD kind of flares up, so to speak, during maybe higher allergy seasons versus other times of the year?
Absolutely. I see. And that's one of my big clues to look at histamine as a connection. Oftentimes people will share one of two things. Either my PMDD is way worse when my seasonal allergies are acting up, or they may say, I think I have allergies, but they're not really seasonal because I have these symptoms all the time. And I think it's important as we go through, you know, symptom lists to look at, you're not necessarily going to have every single symptom. And so looking at the timing, like we talked about, you know, do you have symptoms around ovulation? They kind of let up and then they like come back in full force, you know, that week or so before the period. And then also, do you have do you kind of check off some of these as we go down the list? And it can be, even if you don't have seasonal allergies or anything like that, do you have some of these more obscure things that you never related to your cycle? Like Monica was saying, you know, even for me, I actually have histamine intolerance issues myself. I'll eat, you know, a certain food and all of a sudden I'll just like be coughing. Like my throat will hurt, I'll be coughing, or I'll wake up at night coughing, that irregular heartbeat. And kind of a really unique symptom, even if listeners want to like do a test on themselves, if you like scratch yourself, like scratch your arm, if you get like red marks that are like a little bit raised and that redness doesn't go away right away, can be like a really significant sign that there's histamine stuff going on.
You've been mentioning symptoms. Like, can we just run through that list maybe of like, what are some of the histamine symptoms as it relates to hormones and PMS and PMDD?
Yeah, well, and maybe let's start with ones that can be typical of PMS and PMDD in general and histamine, like breast tenderness, period pain, the mood things like anxiety, irritability, brain fog is a huge one, insomnia, especially if the insomnia is cyclical. So those can be ones that can be related to a lot of different things. So if you're seeing those and you're seeing some of these other ones that are more typical of histamine intolerance, like hives or itchy skin, a creepy kind of crawly sensation, like if you've experienced that, you know what I'm talking about, where you're just like feel like you kind of want to crawl out of your skin, nasal congestion, almost feeling like you're coming down with a cold like all the time or cyclically, flushing, sweating, irregular heartbeat or high heart rate, dizziness, low blood pressure, the dermatographia, is that like the raised red marks I mentioned with itching, and even things like feeling like joint pain or fluid retention. A lot of people will talk about like, oh my gosh, I retain so much water at certain points in my cycle. Why is that happening? Or it's not going away with other things that they've tried can be a big one. And then even things that, you know, diarrhea and digestive related symptoms, sometimes like reflux or like indigestion and like headaches and or even migraines for some people, especially if they're like cyclical with the cycle too. So those are the big ones. Nora, anything you want to add or that I missed? There can be so many symptoms of this.
I mean, that's, yeah, definitely like a broad. I think the challenging piece is that a lot of those symptoms can overlap with so many things too. And that's why like we have to play detective in this. And the more information, the more data that we can gather can be really, really helpful with even just keeping track of those symptoms. And if it's happening 30 minutes after a meal, or if it's been, you know, just those cyclical, but if you notice it's more in a cyclical pattern versus that everyday, those things can be really helpful. And I think, you know, I would love to speak to more of like the gut connection of things, because there are even certain bacteria, and one of the most common ones that I see in individuals is H. pylori, where over 50% of the population has H. pylori, and it can be part of our commensal or normal bacteria. But when it's in an overgrowth or we have too much of it, that can be a very high histamine producing bacteria. So that doesn't really exist in a silo necessarily, and it's not just in menstruating individuals, or it can be, again, another piece of the puzzle. So I just want to speak to the fact that in all of these symptoms that we're naming, there can be a lot of overlap, and there even just identifying is part of it, but helping to really address the underlying causes or things that could be contributing, for example, like the H. pylori. One other thing that I see with that is even some malabsorption or some food showing up in the stool for individuals. That's a pretty big one, especially with histamine intolerance. It can increase our motility. It decreases the transit time, meaning things are moving a little bit too quickly through our system. So this is something that we touched on briefly before, but that's another sign for me that there can be just this like inflammatory response. Things are moving through the system too quickly than they really should be.
So I have a question. Like when it comes to histamines and we're going to dig into genetics a little bit more too, but like, you know, we're talking about having high histamines, having low histamines. Is this something that you're born with and you have, and it's just your reality? Or like, can we do, like, does it come from our nutrition? You know, how do our histamines get high or low or out of balance, if you will?
Super important question. And I would say the answer is like, it depends. And I can share a little bit about my story that, and we'll dive into the genetics, but I have really cruddy genetics when it comes to histamine. I don't make a lot of the enzymes that break it down, but I haven't had histamine issues my entire life. They've come and gone depending on, you know, for me, it's been nutrient status and the state of my gut health. And as an example, I had to be on IV antibiotics for multiple days for sepsis. And then I had to take, you know, oral antibiotics for quite a while. And I had full blown like histamine, you know, it just like came out of the woodwork. And all of a sudden I had what's called POTS, if anyone's familiar with that. But I hadn't had that my whole life. It wasn't until like had to be on all the antibiotics and my gut health was so disrupted. And with that stress, I wasn't taking my multivitamin, my B6, and some of the things that normally help me. And it was just like the perfect storm.
Just for the listener, POTS is postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. And it's typically if you are laying down versus standing up, having blood pressure changes, and you can have like dizziness and fainting, etc. Just wanted to share that.
Yes. But you don't have to have that, you know, histamine issues, you know, just to, you know, we're not destined by our genetics is what I'm saying. There can be other things that impact if we have too much histamine or we're not able to process it. Everything from a gut health, like we've been talking about, nutrient status, even hormonal imbalances, excess stress, certain medications, which we can get into more, can all impact or kind of like tip the histamine scale unfavorably.
And so because of that, because of the histamines being high or low, that ends up being an agitation point for hormones and for people who experience PMDD? Is that right? Like it just exacerbates the symptoms?
Yeah. And it could be helpful to think of it like a bucket. Well, oftentimes, you know, even if you like Google online, there's like histamine bucket, you'll see really helpful graphics where, you know, we can have things coming into the bucket, adding histamine to the bucket, like I was mentioning, certain foods, dairy, alcohol, fermented foods being some of the biggest ones, the gut imbalances, inflammation, the certain medications. And then if we're not able to like bail the histamine out of the bucket, then it overflows. And that can happen related to genetics, or we're not making those enzymes, or, you know, so many different things. But that's when it can start to show up symptom-wise, as far as you're going to have the symptoms that we've listed out. Or you might have, think of it as like if you have a bucket and it has this much space and you have a little bit of wiggle room where your histamine symptoms are under control, but then your cycle comes in and the estrogen fluctuations make that bucket overflow and then your symptoms show up. And so it doesn't, some people have histamine symptoms all month and they get worse cyclically, and some people just have them cyclically. So I think that's important to look at to help kind of hint at the severity of the problem.
Yeah. And so when you say too, like bailing out the histamines, is that, do we bail out our histamines through digestion, or is it a natural process? Is it not eating some of those foods like you talked about, like having the alcohol or avoiding dairy? Does that help bail or regulate the histamines? I guess, like, what helps us regulate there?
Yeah, I think the first thing is certain nutrients. So we need, you know, certain nutrients, B6 and vitamin C and copper, just to name a few, that help our body make the enzymes. And the enzymes are what break it down and get it out of the bucket. So that's number one for most people. And while we're figuring this all out, it can be helpful to reduce the high histamine foods or the foods that liberate histamine while we're, you know, pretty much piecing together this puzzle. So, you know, for example, some people are really sensitive to leftovers. So the longer the food has been sitting there, the more the histamine has a chance to accumulate in that food. And so leftovers, dairy, alcohol, fermented foods, aged foods can all add to that. But like I said, someone shouldn't have to follow a super low histamine diet while they're figuring that out. Other things that can play a role are, and this is refers to like processes that happen in the body, like methylation. So, and that's a whole big topic, but if we don't have the right nutrients that come in and like power that methylation process, that can impact it too. And that's sometimes where genetics come in as well.
And the big gut connection also.
Yes. Yeah,
methylation is like people not having that MTHFR gene. Is that what it's called?
That can be part of it, yeah.
Okay.
There's many, many genes that impact it. That's just like the superstar one that everyone knows about, talks about. And the other thing that, you know, I've mentioned medications a few times, antihistamines themselves, well, they can give like temporary symptom relief, can block the enzymes that we need to bail the histamine out of the bucket. And so that can be, you know, and Nora, you had mentioned you have clients that are like, I feel so much better on an antihistamine. That can be a good way to test if histamine is an issue. And maybe you do this too. I'll have someone intentionally take an antihistamine at the height of their symptoms and see if they get some relief. But long term, that type of solution can come back to bite you in the butt because of how it blocks it. Even antidepressants can block the breaking down of histamines, which and birth control too, because of the synthetic estrogens. So we look at PMDD and two of the primary treatments, birth control and antidepressants. And if there's histamine stuff going on, it makes sense why someone might feel a little bit worse.
Yeah, super interesting. I was going to ask that, you know, even people like who take an antihistamine often when they are experiencing allergies and that kind of stuff, long-term use of antihistamines, like, can that just make the overload worse? It sounds like the answer is yes.
I think it can. Nora, do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, well, especially for, you know, you mentioned the connection to stomach acid production. So it can definitely have some downwind effects if you are taking that constantly and really blocking. Like low stomach acid is probably one of the number one drivers that sets us up for gut issues. And so that's something that I do not advise unless, again, it's absolutely necessary. There are workarounds for a lot of these things, and I don't recommend long-term use of it.
Yeah. And I think people, you know, at the beginning of their journey, there's nothing wrong as long as, you know, pharmacist, doctor, like, okay with the use of histamines, to just know that you have that there as like a crutch. And so I think that's important because, you know, for anyone who's experienced severe PMDD, it can be just super fear provoking to know that those symptoms are coming and to feel like you have like no solution in the moment. And so I think, you know, again, try it, see if it makes a difference, and then keep digging at, you know, what could the potential root causes be.
No, you wanted to bring up like the difference between histamine intolerance versus mast cell activation syndrome. So if anyone's heard of MCAS before, if you wanted to just speak on that briefly too, I think that might be helpful.
Yeah. And so mast cells are those immune proteins that can release histamine, but they also release a lot of other things. And so I think of it as like a spectrum. You could have like on this side, no issues at all, kind of moving in, you could have histamine intolerance, more moderate issues, all the way to full-blown mast cell activation. Or there's more rare conditions that are typically genetic and super severe, like mastocytosis. And so think of it on a spectrum. And working with a professional who's experienced with this, they can help you determine where do you fall within that. So then you know, what those potential solutions may be. Pretty much how deep do you need to go to address this. For some people, it is as simple as they need to get the histamine out of the bucket and they're going to get a lot of relief. For other people, there needs to be like deeper immune type work and mast cell stabilization, it's called. And so, but oftentimes if someone's getting relief from either a low histamine diet or taking the antihistamines, that's their first clue. But if they can't move beyond that and, you know, stop those things without their symptoms coming back, that's where we might want to start to look at, is it more so mast cell activation or more severe?
For the individual that is hearing, okay, I don't have to be on histamine diet for a long time, and I shouldn't take a antihistamine like a Zyrtec or a Claritin for a long time. Can we speak to just maybe one or two things that maybe even your approach specifically or your story even to shed some light on, you know, this doesn't have to be a long-term thing. There are other ways once we're really addressing, maybe managing things like estrogen, et cetera. What does that kind of look like?
For me, the first step is really getting someone a little bit of relief. And the reason being is they can get, like, just make a dent. They're going to have capacity to, like, keep taking the other steps to address it. And I might sound like a broken record from what my last episode, but oftentimes that is nutrient support. And even just taking multivitamin that's giving you B vitamin support, extra B6 and magnesium is enough to like calm the storm a little bit. I mean, give you a leg up so you can keep taking more steps. And then from there, I will typically do some experimenting just to confirm, like, this is what's happening. And it might be the over-the-counter antihistamine or a short-term phase of a low histamine diet to see, does this make a difference? And then we look at, like, the whole person of, like, what other signs and symptoms do they have that tell us where to dig into next? You know, if they have a lot of gut-related symptoms or history of gut issues, we might be looking even at a comprehensive stool analysis. So I know, Nora, you also do this with a lot of your clients where they literally mail in your poop and we get a, you know, really comprehensive look at the microbiome and a lot of things related to digestion so that we know what to address. Is there overgrowth of certain bacteria, not enough of other bacteria, things like that? Or oftentimes I'll bring in and look at the genetic factors. And so knowing where someone has genetic variants that may set them up for more challenges, then we can look at specifically, what do we need to do here? And that might look like sometimes it's that's where nutrients come in again, more specifically to help those enzymes function. There's certain enzymes we can take to like break down the histamine from a supplement perspective, or certain things we can do. Even there's foods and supplements that can stabilize those mast cells and make them happy so they're not just randomly releasing the histamine all the time. So just a few examples. And overarching everything is making sure that we're looking at anything contributing to inflammation or impacting hormone balance. So those two go, you know, come into play for most people, that the more inflamed we are, the more histamine we're going to release, the less happy our brain is because that inflammation actually reaches the brain.
What are some of those things in terms of inflammation that you see most often? Just like what is maybe triggering inflammation for a lot of people? I mean, off the top of my head, I can think of like probably dairy, maybe alcohol. Those are the things that come to mind for me, but I don't know if there's other things maybe that play a role in that inflammation area.
Yeah, that's so many things. And sometimes it can be things that come in and I think of it like add to the inflammatory fire. For some people, that is dairy and alcohol, like you mentioned. For some people, gluten or processed foods, refined, you know, sugar, those sorts of things. And at the same time, even before we start just taking everything out of the diet, adding things in. So the more variety we have, especially in with produce, if we can have like a just an abundance of plant-based foods and produce, that is like what puts out the fire, along with certain fatty acids like omega-3s. Those are like the basic foundational things that we want to do to quiet down inflammation. And even eating enough and having that balanced plate that I'm sure comes up in every single episode, if we can keep blood sugar balance, that's going to reduce how much we're adding to the inflammatory fire. And so oftentimes when we talk about a complex topic like histamine, we think the solution that we're starting with has to be complex. And, you know, as you know, hear us talking, it's coming back to foundational things that are going to help most people. Multivitamin and nutrients, balancing your blood sugar, getting a lot of, you know, plant-based foods and fiber. And so those are things that even if you're like big question mark, if this is a factor, those things are going to help anyone struggling with PMS and PMDD to begin.
That's exactly where I start. My group program, like the first whole third of it is literally teaching all of those foundations. And people are like, when are we going to learn about this? When are we going to learn about this? I'm like, we are going to get there. But unless you're nailing these things, you can supplement day in, day out. But if you don't address these things, they're just going to come back. So we can't rush. Like, it's not a race. You want to address them and do it for the long haul, make it sustainable, right?
Yeah. And it's awesome to hear you talking about even just like food diversity. Nora and I touched on that in our cycle syncing episode where like, yeah, eat fresh food, but also like switch it up, you know? And I think cycle syncing does such an amazing job at creating that variety, one, for your taste buds, and two, like for your body. So go listen to that episode if you haven't, because we talk deeply diversity of whole foods in that episode.
Yeah. Well, and Nora, I'm sure you see this a lot. Like sometimes even if you hadn't like ever met with a client and you get their stool analysis back, you can only almost like guess how varied their diet is just by what their microbiome looks like, what balance of gut bacteria they have.
Totally.
Your little gut bugs love variety. That's one of the best things that you can do is, you know, bring in as many different foods, you know, as you can. And that could be as simple as adding new spices and herbs to a meal, even if, you know, you want to start with familiar things and just, you know, flavor it differently.
Yeah. And I think that's where, you know, somebody might be reading like low histamine diet on the internet helps PMDD. And then you've been following it for 5 years. And that can also really mess you up long term, because it is severely limiting the amount of foods, not just plants, but I have even talked about like, even something like gluten is going to feed different bacteria in a way that other foods can't or don't. So like, it's really speaking to all foods. It doesn't just have to be from plant foods, although plant fibers are what's really going to help make that gut microbiome thrive.
Absolutely. You can tell we like to talk about gut health here.
Yeah. I am more curious on like the genetic side of things, because that's like an area that I haven't leaned into too much. And I know you spoke to some like genetic mutations, especially when it comes to removing histamine. So I'm thinking of like those specific enzymes, or when we talk to nutrient status, you know, briefly mentioned like the main methylator, the MTHFR gene. So in addition to those things, or even to those things, are like, what are some of the genetic components that can really predispose you to PMDD? Or like, my question is almost like, how do you know it's truly PMDD? Or if you are just someone that has some of these gut issues and you address it and then your hormones fall into place and you feel better, like, do you then, I don't know, to me, PMDD is more of a spectrum. Like, I think some individuals experience it on a very different level and severity than others.
Yeah, well, let's kind of dissect that little by little, because there's sometimes this notion that if you take action and you get relief, that it wasn't PMDD in the first place, which I just want to like bust that myth right here, because I've personally, and many of my clients, like I had such severe PMDD that I was on extended medical leave, and I've gotten to a place where I have minimal to no symptoms, but it'll sneak back in if I like take out my pillars of support, like there it is back again. And so I still have the genetic predisposition. I still have the brain chemistry. I've just figured out how to like hack my system essentially and work with my clients to do the same. But there is a high heritability rate, and it's like pretty wide range, like 30 to 80%. Who knows? Because oftentimes I'll hear, and this is, you know, even the case in my family where I'm like, looking back, I do wonder if my mother had it. And I hear that all the time where someone will say, I really suspect that my mother has it or my sister has it. They have these other diagnoses, but I've always wondered if it were PMDD. And so even if, you know, you notice that it is genetic or runs in the family, that doesn't mean that there's nothing you can do. Like I mentioned before, we're not destined by our genes. And actually knowing more about our genetics can help us be more targeted in what we actually do to like almost like circumnavigate any genetic variants that aren't in our favor to reduce those symptoms. Does that kind of make sense of like how genetics play a role, but they're not everything?
I mean, it's just so interesting to hear, because Mandy, similar to you, you know, learned that I had PMDD, took action against it, and since have, you know, had very mild symptoms. Of course, like you said, every month ebbs and flows, and but I'm genetically predispositioned. Is that what you said? Am I using the words right here? To these symptoms. So, you know, I have a higher stress month. I travel and I don't eat as well. I suck at my supplement regimen for a month. Like, I notice a difference. And I think it's so important for our listener or someone with PMDD to hear this, that like every month, just because healed and you've learned to live with it, like every month isn't going to be perfect. And even for us who like, quote unquote, have it figured out, like, yeah, it's not our life is not static. And so neither will this disorder that we're living with be. And so I guess like when it comes to that, like understanding that for me kind of provides relief that it's okay to have symptoms 1 month and not the other and feel it more sometimes than the other. But when I think of genetics, I'm like, born with this sensitivity then? And I know like for sure when I talk to my grandmother about it, who's had a hysterectomy, like she's like, oh yeah, I think I had that too. She's like, we obviously didn't have a name for it. And I know you don't necessarily have the answer because there's not enough research, but like, was I born with this?
I think we could say one can be born with the predisposition. And then there's multiple triggers and factors that come in to like bring that to life, essentially. Just the same as like if it kind of brings it out of the woodwork, we can put it back in by addressing some of those things. And even someone might be listening wondering like, well, can I test these genetics? And there is research on the genetics where as far as like tests that are available to consumers, there's some things that we can test and some things that we can't. So for example, there's research looking at a genetic variant called COMT, C-O-M-T, that we can test. That's on every genetic test I run. And that impacts how we metabolize hormones and our brain chemicals. It impacts even like dopamine and things like that. That we can test. We can test another one that's often looked at with serotonin called HTR1A. And also all the genes related to inflammation and hormones and detoxification, those sorts of things, even nutrients, those we can look at. And then we have that targeted or specifics of what we can address. There's one in the research that I haven't found in a test available to consumers called ESR1. But I think when we're looking at family history and all these other things, we have enough pieces of the puzzle to say, there's some genetic influence here. Now we can look at what to do with that.
And so when you say like you test these genetics with people and obviously you see, you know, some consistencies with people who have PMDD, is right?
Mm-hmm.
And then like you just said, you know, we can see what we can do. So say someone is showing these genetic factors, what are some of the quote unquote treatments or support that you kind of, is it, I mean, I'm just guessing here, but is it kind of some of the same, you know, those all those other things that we always talk about?
Yeah, well, and I can share a little bit about my genetics because I feel like they are a perfect example of how this can all happen. So one of the genes, like if you have one copy of it, it's the HTR1A one, that's a 2.5 time increase for your like risk of PMDD. And I have that specific variant, which I was like, as I started digging into the research, I'm like, ooh, interesting. I was like glad to find it, you know, myself as a case study. And I have genes that, like I mentioned, impact the histamine stuff. I have really, really crappy genes. Like my body is horrible at controlling inflammation. I have to be very careful with, you know, my diet and having enough anti-inflammatory foods to keep that at bay. I even have a gene that makes B6, which is super important for mood and this histamine stuff, that makes it clear out of my body really quickly. So I can feel a difference if even if I go a few days without taking B6, when I take an activated form called P5P specifically, and I have some other genes that impact hormones. Like I have, I would say, a predisposition to more of like a PCOS type picture. And so it's like all of that kind of converges. And I think in my case, to like create the severity of PMDD that I experienced. And so it was like little by little helping to shift my diet to control the inflammation, get the nutrients I needed. And then for me, I'm just careful at this point with high histamine foods around certain points of my cycle. So I don't do a lot of dairy or alcohol around ovulation, or I'll be kind of that rage symptom will come out for me, or irritability, anxiety. And so I can kind of cycle sync my diet where I can have flexibility and then also just know my like trigger times of like, I need to be a little bit more careful during these times, to kind of keep the peace in my body. So knowing all of that, we can look at, you know, someone's unique factors and figure out how to, you know, for me, I'm always helping them work towards the most sustainable, most flexible place possible, because life is meant to be lived, not to just like be trying to hone in and like have the perfect diet or supplement plan all the time. We have to use this information to simplify and as much as we can.
I love that. I really like that piece you sharing about like being able to kind of cycle sync specifically to you. And I think that really just brings home the point of All this stuff is so individualized. So again, with sharing all this information, we're not trying to overwhelm by any means, but empower you and know that there are so many things that even if they are out of our control necessarily, like our genetics, for example, that's not something that we can actively change. But knowing there are things that we can do to support our specific genetics and manage all of these symptoms, like that is quality of life. That is always my goal when I work with individuals, is getting to that point. I really love that.
I think too, I know a lot of times we hear from people, I mean, we're talking about a lot of testing, and with testing comes the money, and then it becomes this point of stress for people, which we all know stress is not good. So I think one of my questions would be, and maybe, you know, like Nora just said, it is also individual. And so that's why the testing is so, so important. But is there hope? Is there a place for the person who maybe can't afford that like individualized care? And maybe just could you share, like, are there some things that just the average person who's experiencing these symptoms could do without the testing?
I feel like you're living proof of that, Monica.
I know, but you know, people so often like feel really, really stressed and shameful that they can't afford the individual care. And they're like, that means I can't heal. And so I would just love to provide for that person out there who's listening, who's like, this is great, but I can't do the tests, or I can't work with a provider like Mandy on this topic. What are some action points someone can take today to take control a little bit?
Yeah, I love that question. I think the biggest thing, like you were saying, Nora, is the whole purpose of this podcast is to empower people with information. And to, I think I see symptom relief even just by someone taking an action step, whether it's the right or the perfect step, even just by saying, yep, I'm taking the reins here, I'm making a change, gives you that sense of agency and empowerment that you're like, no, this condition is not going to win. It's not going to be all of who I am. And so I think step number one for me would be, surprise, surprise, tracking your symptoms and the timing of your symptoms. Seeing if, you know, with some of the symptoms that we've shared and the timing around right before ovulation and that week before the period, if that aligns with what you're experiencing, and if you have some of those more nuanced symptoms, okay, now we're getting some information. From there, the second step might be doing the over-the-counter antihistamine and seeing if that helps. Like, you know, as long as your doctor's okay with that, like take it, rate your symptoms that you're experiencing in that moment on a scale of 1 to 5 or whatever, and then check back in with yourself a few hours later. Did it make a dent? Are you feeling at least some relief? And then from there, looking at those foundational layers that we talked about with diet, balancing your blood sugar, coming back to the balance plate, the anti-inflammatory foods, and taking a multivitamin can go a really, really long way. And I have found for some people, the picture is really complex and they have to be more targeted with the testing. For other people, even cyclically reducing dairy and alcohol, along with eating an anti-inflammatory diet, is all it takes. For some people, it doesn't, you know, have to go so deep and looking at, you know, the gut involvement or genetics or these things we're talking about. And so think of it as like an experiment. Each cycle is an experiment to see what did you shift and what was the impact. And that way you have, it's like you're doing a test of one. You're getting that data each and every cycle to keep moving forward.
Yeah. I'll say for me, like alcohol was honestly, obviously, a multivitamin was a game changer. We've heard me say that story before, but you know, removing alcohol from my life, and I'm not saying like I'm not completely dry. If there's an event, a moment, like I love an amazing glass of wine that pairs well with food or a delicious cocktail, you know, but I know I'm making a decision when I drink, especially in my luteal phase, that there's going to be some kind of reaction to that. And so I think like having alcohol for me, such a big one.
Well, and I'll share too that the more we can stabilize someone's system, the more fun we get to have, you know, and the more flexibility that we get to enjoy. Where, for example, I have people that, let's use the alcohol piece, they have alcohol and they're immediately flushed. They could even feel sick or like they have the flu from even just a few sips of alcohol. When we're getting to the root of it and helping their body bail that histamine out of their bucket, all of a sudden they can actually tolerate a drink without feeling so crappy. And so you can even use your response to those histamine-promoting foods like alcohol or dairy to say, oh, have I really like made some progress like in my system overall, if that makes sense. So I think that's the big thing too, that the more you get to the bottom of it, the less you have to worry about some of those things coming in and triggering symptoms.
That actually made me think of a question. I don't know if you have this information readily available or if you know, but are there certain populations that are more at risk, let's say, for things like PMDD?
Demographically, I'm not sure off the top of my head. I think I would guess if there's a strong family history of other like mental health disorders and things like that. And there's lots of information out there about there could be like comorbidities or like PMDD happening alongside of another condition, you know, mental health disorders. It could also be things like ADHD or autism or, you know, multiple things. But I think the challenging thing with research is that it's really severely lacking in looking at a wide, like vast kind of demographics, both with ethnicity and then just lacking research on females in general.
Yeah, it just made me think, because like I know a lot of the Asian population has a really challenging time with alcohol specifically. So I was even wondering if like Asian individuals would be more susceptible to having PMDD per se if they have the histamine intolerance kind of in their genetics.
We need more research.
Yeah, always. Always. Any other follow-up questions, Monica?
No, I mean, this was so informative and it's so interesting to learn on these other areas for me who I just haven't explored them. And I can see them showing up, you know, having this awareness of what it might look like. I can see them showing up for me, but it wasn't like the main driver or the main trigger for me, but definitely super interesting.
My big theme this year is like taking back your health. And I really love that word agency, Mandy. And I think even having this data and information today, these might be things that you can go to your provider with specifics to say like, hey, I would really like to do some genetic testing. Hey, I would really like to check this out. Like just even knowing that you might be able to point towards a more supportive direction or maybe reach out to Mandy if this is something that you're suspecting and you guys can kind of suss this out together. Like, I think that that would be an amazing outcome for our listeners, just knowing that we have these resources available.
Yeah. And speaking of that, Mandy, I know that you have a program for PMDD Warriors. Do you want to share a little bit about that? And is it open right now?
You're like, oh, is it open yet? Yeah, we are opening, or it is open, our second round. And, you know, I'm on a mission. You know, when I talk to people about what I do, I'm like, I work with a condition that people say is like incurable, and I help those people like crush it and find relief. And so I have created I work with people one-on-one, or I also work with groups or a combination or a hybrid of the two to essentially help as many people as I can with this. And the program I call PMDD Revealed, where we go through and look at the potential root causes, reveal what's underneath and figure that out. And that's both in the group and the like hybrid one-on-one format. And it starts at that foundation where we are looking at what can anyone, everyone do with, you know, blood sugar and nutrients and those things. And then from there, we kind of keep peeling back the layers of the onion and combining all that sciencey stuff with the art of menstrual cycle awareness, which I know you both are super passionate about, of like, how do we honor someone's intuition about their needs and their cyclical nature and couple that with addressing the more physiological side, and beautiful things happen when we combine the two of those things. So yeah, I'm excited to open that back up again.
Yeah, so PMDD Reveal. I'll definitely make sure that we put a note in the show notes for anyone interested. Such a good way to work with Mandy. I don't want to say discounted, but more affordable rate. And it is a group program, is that right? So that there's like multiple, you know, you have a cohort of people to support you as well.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, the beautiful part. And, you know, Nora, in your group program, maybe you see the same thing where, you know, we're having, there's pre-recorded content to learn about the science and learn about how, like this, how to take action. And then you have this like group of amazing people walking through those steps with you. And just even the validation that takes place in those groups of like, oh, this isn't just me. You know, there's so much healing that takes place in the group. Sometimes I want to be like a fly on the wall in my own group, just hearing people share and seeing them connect with one another. The only thing I wish, I'm like, I wish we could all be in person, you know, we're always on Zoom, but it's so beautiful to see people from around the nation, even around the world, connecting and feeling less alone.
Yeah, love that. Well, Mandy, thank you for sharing all of this today. So much good information. To our listeners, if you learned something today, you have further questions, make sure you come over to Instagram, ask away. We'll do our best to get you the answers that you're looking for. And yeah, we will see you next week.
All right. Thanks.